Blog Talk Radio.
How y'all doing this evening? Glad to see you back for another episode of the Triple Wing Hammer Report. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in tonight, and especially those people, those new people who are showing up tonight and everything for our guests. First of all, let me get started by saying happy Mother's Day to all your mothers and to your wives and everything out there. I hope you treated them well. Because you can't treat them too good. Mothers and wives are so special in this world. Sometimes you just don't know what to do with them. We don't know what to do with ourselves, really, without them. I think about our last four guests, and I think about the support they get from their wives and everything. And guys, in the profession that we in, we simply can't do it without a supportive wife. So whatever you do, make sure that you you treat them like it's a Mother's Day every day, and I guarantee you, your job will be a lot easier going forward. As usual, we're going to start our broadcast tonight with some announcements and everything. You know, the same announcement that we have every year, every week. Of course, you know, we're talking about educating ourselves, getting ourselves ready for our kids and everything. And first one started with the announcement, the National Single Wing Coach Association, which will be in Dumfries, Virginia, from June 26th through the 28th. And we got those guests. If you go to the Delphi Forum website, you will find that Coach Sergeant has put the final speakers and everything up, and I'll just give you a list of those. Travis Connors from North Carolina, Derek Miner from North Carolina also, Mickey Thompson from Virginia, Sean Orr with the T-Series, Corey Parker, he's going to be talking about the Dutch Meyer's short punt and the River Rouge system. And, of course, Ed Raceley and George Rankovic is going to be there. And to cost all that knowledge that you'll be receiving, not only from those guys, but the other guys who will be attending the symposium, will be $25 for an individual coach. And, boy, you cut a good deal here, $50 for your entire staff. So, again, you know how I feel on that. I preach about it every week. You can't get better unless you hang around with people who are doing things that you want to do. And to get there and to touch them and to sit down and get that one-on-one with them, you get that quality time with them. Of course, we got the conclave that's coming up in Wilkes-Barre, headed by Todd Bross. I keep messing his name up. I don't know why. But it'll be the 14th Single Wing Conclave, and that's going to be held March 6th and 7th of next year. And Todd will let us know when he get all the speakers and everything. But that's way in the future and everything. But you can mark those things down on your calendar to start preparing for it. It is always good. There's never a bad conclave. Those guys are live, and they work hard, they teach hard, and we learn hard, and we have a lot of fun afterwards. So it's good that you get there and meet some of those guys, because they are character. We got the Double Wing Symposium that'll be held in that's normally held in February, but JJ will let me know when so we can get that posted and everything. But these are three great things that we can go to people to educate ourselves and to get ready for what we face on a daily basis. You can't ever get too smart in this game, and the minute you think you're too smart, that's when you start heading downhill. There's always something that you can learn. There's always something that you can learn in this game. So start making plans to be there. You know, it's you can't beat it for the price and the experience. Couple of things. If you again, we didn't have anyone to email me about some kids who were doing some great things in their school, or scholarships or whatever. But if you have some things, you have some people, or any coaches have any promotions to anything, or you add somebody that's doing good in your staff and everything, let me know so we can give them a shout out. I especially want to give Harold Strauss a shout out. You know, he got that machine going on. I think all the NFLers are going to start hanging out at his place. He had two more guys, I believe, to get drafted just over the weekend, and he got from that powerhouse he built out there, Colton High School, with the principals he's teaching those kids and everything. He had two more to join the NFL ranks, and we are so happy and proud of Harold of what he's doing in California, because you know, he's one special guy. And if any of you haven't dropped him a line and everything, you know, you need to drop him a line to wish him well. He had hip surgery and he seems to be doing well, and you know, you need to drop a line just to let him know that you care about him a little bit. Books that we got, and you know, Harold gave us a lot of things to talk about when he was on the show, but books that he has suggested that we read. I mean, I've read all four of them now, and I got one more to add to the thing. A friend of mine sent me another one, suggested that I read that. And the book is one of the books. Well, let me give it a list of the books to kids if someone is new. Season of Life by Jeffrey Marks. Great book to read. The Butterfly Effect by Andy Andrews. Let me tell you what I'm doing with The Butterfly Effect. I've ordered 300 copies of those, and I'm going to pass those out to every kid in our program, in our football program, because I think that sends a powerful message. And when you read that book, you will see how powerful it is. So if you have not gotten that book, you know you need to get it. It's a quick 15 to 20 minute read, and it's just a great book. I read it at least once a week just to make sure I get it. The other book is Inside Out Coaching by Joe Ehrman. And, of course, one book I recommended last week was Good to Great by Jim Collins. And there's another one that I just got through reading. Normally, I don't read books by Super Bowl winners because or any kind of winners because, you know, it's a lot of fluff and all that stuff. But the book that Christ, don't let the man leave me. Win Forever, Live, Work, and Play Like a Champion. And I'm so embarrassed. I've been working so hard today. Pete Carroll, by Pete Carroll, but the Seattle Seahawks coach. He is a great book to read. I mean, he outlines everything in that book, a great relationship book with players and everything. And guys, I tell you, it's a lot more than X's and O's. A lot more than X's and O's. So if you can get those books, you can go right to Amazon and download them. If you got a Kindle or whatever, or if you got an iPad, you can download those books immediately and start reading. You know, that's what I do. I'd like to get them now and start reading. I don't have any more announcements, and I'm waiting on Coach Murphy to sign in right here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put on the music and I'll be back in a second, and just everybody hold on, and we'll just wait for Tim Murphy to call in. right, guys. I'm back. Look like we have an issue here. I can't raise Tim up on the telephone. And maybe we had a conflict with the dates, or we had the dates mixed up and everything. So I don't know. And I'm going to hold the lines open for a few more minutes. I tried to contact him. I left some message for him. Maybe he'll call in a few minutes. But tell you what, I'm going to open the lines up for you guys if you want to ask a question or if you want to. Oh, look at here. Look at here. Let me stop right now. Look like Tim is online right now. Let's see if we can get him rolling here. Let's see here. Tim, are you there?
I'm there. How you doing?
Hey,
Sorry about that.
Man.
I got a little hung up.
Okay, that's all right. That's all right, man.
All right.
How's everything going?
Going well. We start spring ball tomorrow, so we're just getting last-minute preparations and playbook additions and all that kind of good stuff ready for tomorrow.
Okay, well, I'm sure glad you got it, man. You had me a little nervous there. Well, I was nervous.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's all right, man. For the coaches out there, I'm glad you're here because a lot of them are very excited to have you coming on tonight and everything. And at least they got to listen to a little concert of music from me and everything. So
okay, all right.
So we can roll from there. They can see the kind of swerve I have in my music and everything. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, how was Mama's Day for Chrissy?
Good. We did a little BJ's and took Mom out too and had a good little breakfast brunch type thing. How about yourself?
Well, I was here by myself today. I'm not taken and everything. I'm a little single guy.
Yeah.
So.
That's right.
You know,
you're working, man. You're working.
Well, that's all I got to do.
Yeah.
You know, I've been going over your stuff and everything, and I just something just over your history and everything.
Okay.
I know you because I asked the questions and everything, but a lot of guys know of you, but don't really know you.
Okay.
You like to tell everybody who is this Tim Murphy?
kind of hard to say, I guess, like that, but just a guy that took the wing tee and started experimenting with the double wing and took over a couple of schools that were struggling a little bit, kind of the same old story with a lot of double wing coaches, and started turning programs around and then started putting our own spin on it, and I guess our latest spin has been, the shotgun stuff. So we were ranked twice top 50 in the country, and once top 25, and even after the season was over, people were asking me, are you still going to stay with that offense? And, we're scoring 40, 50 points a game, and it seems like we could never get away from the stigma of the devil wing because it's not something you see on Saturdays and Sundays, and it's something that parents who are kind of ignorant to the understanding of recruiting don't think their kids can get recruited from as much. So when I took over Clayton Valley, the school I'm at now, two seasons ago, I said I'm going to go all out with this shotgun thing I've been experimenting with, and lo and behold, it probably worked even better than our regular double wing, and then that stigma, for whatever reason, of the double wing seems to be, completely eliminated, and parents and kids are excited, and shoot, we got four transfers in the last month, all skill guys. That probably wouldn't happen before because, most skill guys are going to want to play receiver or do something in a spread-type offense, but, all of a sudden this thing's really taken off in popularity and probably went from averaging around 40 points to around 50 points now. So it's working well.
Where'd you go to college at, Tim? And what position did you play in college?
So I went to University of Santa Barbara here in California, and the program folded with all the Title IX programs, stuff that was happening in California with a lot of programs out here and my junior year. So I was going to continue and transfer to UCLA, but I kind of realized by then I was a true D2 player and it probably wouldn't have been in my best interest. So took one more year of school and then immediately started coaching football the Monday after I graduated from Santa Barbara and been going ever since.
How long you been coaching?
Pretty much, I guess about 20 years now, 20, 21 years, I guess I'm going on. And only two of those, I was a D coordinator and then the rest have been as a head coach. So, about 19, 20 years. So
going back to the, the original double wing that you ran when you were at how you say that word with the Y, the high school with the Y?
So that was Ignacio Valley High School.
Ignacio, yeah.
I mean, almost like an I.
Why did you decide to, what got you to running double wing?
Well, you know, I knew I had to have a system, and the best system at the time, in my opinion, back then was the wing tee and what Delaware was doing and a couple high schools down south were doing. And, you know, I knew it was a school that I couldn't just run plays and grab bag, and things had to be complementary to each other. They had to be balanced. And so, you know, right off the bat, we had some pretty good success moving the ball, getting first downs, not scoring as many points as I would have liked. But considering the school was struggling so bad in the prior years, it was considered a success. And, you know, when I would go into a little bit shorter yardage situations, we'd go double tight with the wing tee, and lo and behold, instead of getting 2 or 3 yards, we're breaking off, you know, 15 and 20 yard runs. So I kind of got interested in, and we had bigger than faster type kids back then. The wing tee is kind of good to have small kids. And, with the double wing, you can have small kids or big kids because you don't have to pull as far. And I met with Jerry Valentin, who wrote the book, The Toss, who was up in Reading. And, actually I talked to him over the phone at first, and then kind of took his ideas and mixed it with the Delaware wing tee we're running, and then it just kind of evolved ever since. You know, at Ignacio Valley, it was a very inner city school in the sense that, you know, a lot of these kids were playing only football, maybe some basketball and track, and that was it. So I had them in the off season to experiment a lot, and you know, it kind of just took off from there.
Who did you pattern yourself after mostly, or did you come up with your own ideas as far as running the double wing? I know you mentioned Jerry, but was there anybody else that had an influence on you?
Well, obviously Markham, because, you know, he basically fathered this whole foundation of the double wing. You know, I met with him a few times, and he's been real good. You know, I looked at Hugh Wyatt stuff, and you know, I'm not his biggest fan for whatever reason right now. You know, I took some of his ideas, and you know, and honestly, it was really about double teams and angles that I felt was really big for the type of kids that we were going to have, and kids that weren't necessarily playing football from fifth grade on type kids, and then started realizing that, you know, in all reality, it has a lot to do with math. If you can just get more people to the point of attack and the defense can handle, they're in trouble. And, you know, we did an all-star game in 98 and broke every offensive record in that game. Had been going on since the 60s, and you know, it really made me go, okay, well, you can do this with non-athletes, you can do this with kids who haven't played a whole lot of football, and you can do this with great athletes and have tremendous mm-hmm. success. So you know, I think the more talent you have, the more big plays you're going to get, but as far as holding kids back that are very talented, I think that's a really big misnomer. I think some, you know, down in Dominguez, they've done really well with those kids who are tremendous athletes, and kind of all over the country, I always hear about one or two schools that have a lot of D1 type kids, and they're just absolutely tearing it up with running what you would say is an offense made for the underdog. So, you know, I think if you're at the high school level and you don't get to choose the kids that come into your program and always have, you know, two quarterbacks and two good receivers with backups, this is the kind of offense you can win every single year, no matter what your talent base is.
Okay. You did a manual on building programs, and I'll be the first one to say, if you haven't gotten that manual, coaches, you need to go and get that manual from Tim, because it outlines just about everything. And the good thing about it, Tim let you go ahead and fit it to your program. You want to talk about that manual a little bit?
Are you talking about the playbook I just kind of recently put out?
No, the building program. I forgot the one that you had that you used to outline your whole program as far as parents and all that stuff. I think it's a
It is. You're right. It's almost when you say manual, it's so thick that I don't even think about it as a manual. But you're right. And that kind of started from a guy named Justin Fowler, who was seeming to get every job that he ever applied for. And I said, how are you getting these jobs every time? You know, because he wasn't necessarily winning championships at the prior schools, and he's doing good. And he said, it's the book, Murph, it's the book. And, you know, he kind of shared with me this book that he did. And then I'm like, wow, you know, all this stuff that he is doing not only is really good, but I already have this in my computer. I need to put it together because I've just been making, collecting, and stealing all kinds of things from how to handle parents to, you know, what's the best way to weight train kids, you know, as far as drugs and alcohol, what to do, just the things that are really important to building a high school football program, and just kind of put it in a book. And for the most part, everybody that has used that book in a job interview since I started doing that about 2 years ago has gotten their job. So it's been real successful as far as that goes. And then obviously it's a good blueprint to follow when taking over a new program, especially a struggling program, but really any program. And it's really been good. I probably had as much feedback on that, positive feedback on that, as I have with the offensive stuff. So it's been good to share with people.
Yeah, I use it exclusively at the places. I got it a couple of years ago. And when we were trying to actually, the book's been up about 3 or 4 years, right?
Yeah, I guess it has been, probably a little bit longer. About three years, right.
I think when you first got it, I went on and bought it, and it put everything in perspective for us. And when I got here at Marion High School, I mean, everything just laid out. It made the transition a lot easier for coaches and everything, because they knew exactly what I wanted, and they were just able to go to the manual and do everything. So I recommend everybody get that book.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's been good. Yeah. And again, like you said, it's kind of good to hand out to your assistant coaches too.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You do a lot with academics, and it's spelled out in the thing. And I noticed in your bio on your website that a lot of your kids have pretty good GPAs. You want to go into how you do that and what things do you do to get your kids academically inclined?
Yeah, you know, I think first of all we grade check them every week, and that's big because no matter what, they're feeling like they're being held accountable. And actually, I should say every other week now, but, you know, depending when you first take over, I think you got to do it every week. So right off the bat, them knowing that you're looking out after them. And then I usually, like right now, what we have is lunch study hall. I'll either do after school study hall or lunch study hall. So if you have an F or two Ds, you're in there with me at lunch or after school, or even before school. We even did over in Clovis sometimes, until that D and that F is clear, those two Ds and that F is cleared from your progress report or your current grades. And, you know, that and then just making sure that if a kid needs to leave practice a little early to get something done, you know, we let them do it. If a kid has to do something that sometimes might sacrifice a little bit farther the athletic part of the team, and then them just knowing that, you know, I think as long as they're not taking advantage of that, that makes them realize, well, shoot, man, Coach Murr's kind of psycho in football, but he'll still let me do something academic before it. So I guess it really emphasizes them how important that we feel as coaches that it is that they take care of their business. And we all know, I mean, 90% of the bad grades out there are due to lack of effort. And those kids that with the lack of effort, they're usually going to hurt you somewhere down the road as far as getting in trouble, being ineligible, or just doing something on the field that's not very smart because they're not used to holding themselves accountable to doing things right. So, it's a definitely transfer effect all the way across the board. And, I think that's one of the reasons we have so many kids, too. You know, I can't remember the last time I've had a kid that was ineligible. And two of the schools I was at were, you know, what you could call schools that were below average as far as state standards and all that. This school I'm at right now is right there in the mix. It's been a little bit easier with this group. But still, at the same time, instead of having 15, 20 kids that are really difficult struggling grades, now I have 5 or 10. So, and then that'll probably be one or two by next year, I would assume.
Okay. We have someone who wants to ask you a question, Tim. And
okay.
Let me get him on here.
Sure.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, hey, how you doing? You want to tell us your name and where you're calling from?
My name is Rick Turfey. I'm calling from Ohio. And I run I ran the double wing for like 4 years, and now I'm running Cox's double wing pistol. And I've heard that you've been running, that you have ran the pistol, and do you still run it? And what are some of the benefits that you got out of it?
Yeah, we are. We experimented with the pistol more last year than anything else because I had a running back that was pretty talented, and I wanted to get the ball to both sides pretty equally. You know, the positives of it were that, you know, I could get Miles the ball in any play. Him being back there and semi-hidden behind the quarterback was good as well. The play action pass I thought was really good out of it. The negative was we couldn't use him as a blocker, and we couldn't run crisscross. We run counter crisscross and Trojan crisscross, and those are huge plays for us. And out of pistol, you can't do that, and then you can't have him block the weak side the way we did when he's at a halfback position. So, you know, I like it, and I think it's good. If I had to choose between shotgun double wing with a halfback and pistol double wing with a tailback, I'd probably go with the halfback position just because of the blocking and the crisscross action. But as far as it goes, you can run pretty much every play, and I think the only thing, like I said, are those two disadvantages. But it's a pretty good set out of this blocking formation.
Right. Because what I have seen either out of running, you know, the true double wing before is that out of the pistol set, we average, you know, 2 to 3 times more yard per carry than we did out of the double wing.
Wow, yeah.
And you know, like this year, we was running like 8 to 10 yards per carry from the pistol set. And, you know, and the misdirection was even a lot better than it was out of the double wing. And, you know,
yeah,
we'd face the same opponents. That's why I was just curious.
Yeah, no, I think you're definitely going to get more long yardage plays out of it. And, you know, I think at the same time, if you run the double wing, you're kind of in an offense that is made to get 3, 4, or 5 yards every time, but not necessarily the big play when you're in a pistol or a shotgun. I think you might be a little – you could be, I'd just say in theory, not necessarily you or not even necessarily with us last year, but in theory, I guess you take a chance about not necessarily getting 3 to 4 yards every single play, but you can definitely get a lot more big plays out of it.
Maybe okay, just our personnel, but we did really good. I thank you, and I enjoy all your stuff.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick, for calling. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
Okay. Tim, you and another coach, look, you coach us on the West Coast. You're all fanatics about the weight room and everything and off-season conditioning and all that good stuff. Another guy, Rick Darlington, I don't know if you've heard of Rick or know Rick, over at Parker High School in Florida. You and him.
Yeah. Single wing, right?
Yeah. You and him run the most intense off-season program that I have seen. Could you go into your off-season program a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty lucky right now because I have all the kids in weight training class. So, you know, before when I was at Ignacio Valley in the beginning stages of Clovis, I had to bring them in after school and then before school as well. But so, I mean, it's still the same philosophy, though. We're going to get kids in the weight room 4 days a week, no matter how we have to do it. We're real big on getting 5, if possible 6, lifts in a day. And pretty much everything is going to be ground-based. We're not going to do any machines. We're not going to do any cables. We're not going to do anything that's attached to something. So, you know, almost all our lifts are power clean, snatch, high pull, deadlift, squat type lifts. And we'll make sure to do some kind of variation of power clean, some kind of variation of snatch, some kind of variation of squat, and some kind of variation of bench twice a week. So it might be hang clean on Monday, and it might be power clean on Thursday, and it might be hang snatch on Tuesday, and then power snatch on Friday or Thursday, excuse me. So we're always finding a way to get those lifts in twice. Everything else to me is important, but almost auxiliary. You know, lunges I think are really important. I think the thing about my workout that makes it simple and the reason our kids progress at such a rate. You know, I'm not a believer in that whole P90X concept of you have to shock the muscles all the time. There's never been anything scientifically proven that your muscles grow faster when you change up the exercises. I think it's a great mental break, and especially for middle-aged people that are trying to lose weight, gain muscle, it's going to help them. But for kids that are motivated to be in the weight room, no matter what lift they're doing, it's a little bit of a waste of time. So we're going to change the workouts every 3 months, with our core workouts being the same, or our base workouts, I should say. But the lifts say, like, you know, we might do lunges for 3 months, but the next 3 months we're doing side lunges and reverse lunges. You know, we might be doing something with a dumbbell, like one-arm snatch with dumbbells, and then the next time we're doing some kind of rotational movement. So the point of what we do is our lifts have a baseline because we're not changing them so much. So the kids always have something to build on. And I don't mix our reps up. You know, I don't go into the bodybuilding phase nor the powerlifting phase. We lift with a single goal, and that's to get 7 reps. And it sounds kind of boring and basic, but once you do your warm-up, you're doing something. We call it the 4-to-6 rep rule, and you're always trying to get 7. But you're doing something that you know you are going to fail at or have failed at between 4 and 6 reps. And when you eventually get that 7 times, you add 2.5 pounds on each side of the lift that you're doing, and that's your new weight until you get that 7 times. And you just keep on continuing to do that. And, you know, there's been some people that say, well, coach, you know, you got to mix up your reps and you got to mix up your sets and all that. And, shoot, we were 10 for 10 in the Central Valley Powerlifting Contest, and only one team even came 50% of our total score. You know, we doubled the second-place team score for 9 out of the 10 years, and we're completely undefeated in that. And, you know, and we didn't necessarily have kids that were lifting early or doing something out of ordinary. So it really showed, I think, proved kind of the theory that we're on, that it really has to do with effort, consistency, great technique, and then some kind of goal to always have in front of them, as opposed to changing lifts all the time and mixing it up. So to me, the mixing it up part's good for motivation, but really that's our part. That's our job as coaches, to keep them motivated no matter what lifts they're doing.
Do you do anything special for your linemen as far as the weight room?
Nope.
Or are they, everybody's on the same thing?
Everybody's doing the exact same thing. From our quarterback to our biggest lineman, everybody's doing the same lifts. So, you know, again, all our lifts are athletic-based. So they're good for, I mean, they're good for girls water polo. They're good for track. They're good for basketball. They're good for everything that you can do in a functional athletic situation. So, you know, we might have our quarterbacks do some job exercises or something like that for their shoulder because they're doing more things with their arm rotators. But other than that, everything's the same.
Do you have your weight program in literature or on DVD and all this stuff? I know somebody's going to ask the question, so I'm asking for
yeah.
it right now.
Yeah, I do. I got two that I've done. I haven't updated very long, but again, we haven't changed a whole lot. So there is 2 on there with some kids doing demos and kind of a list of how we do our workout. I was probably mix things up a little bit more back then, and right now it's really just about, you know, basics and doing them right. And I think there is a method to the exercises you do per day. You can't have them, you know, deadlift, squat, and lunge all in the same day. You do got to mix it up. But you don't want to necessarily split upper body, lower body. I think that's a waste of time. Athletes don't work like that. So I think you need to do full body workouts. But when you do that, you can't go more than 4 days a week or you will overtrain. So the best possible time to do is Monday, Tuesday, take Wednesday off, do Thursday, Friday. That's pretty difficult to do in a school setting. So for the most part, we're Monday through Thursday and summertime as well. But yeah, I do online at my website. There's some workout DVDs as well.
Okay. Well, I think it's fantastic. I mean, you know, like I told Wyatt, Coach Wyatt last week, I said, when I first got into this thing, I just bought everything that I possibly can and learned from and everything. And your stuff has helped me out tremendously. You know, at the other school, it just completely changed everything that those guys were doing and everything. You got the most comprehensive offensive line drill tapes that I've seen out there in a long time, based for high school. Now, there are a lot of things out there, but they're not geared towards the high school and everything. And you keep it so simple. I just hired an offensive line coach a couple of weeks ago, and I gave him your tape, and I say, do that. You want to explain that?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. No, I mean,
I want you to do this.
anything physical, I think you got to keep simple so kids can be aggressive with it. You know, I think you can teach kids and put kids in position to be aggressive that are not naturally aggressive. So blocking, tackling, and shedding blocks are obviously the most important things to be technically sound and aggressive at. So our our basis is to try to give them 3 to 4 things to really think about on every block, and that's it. And, you know, I stole a lot of stuff from De La Salle when I first went down to the Valley and wasn't playing them anymore. I met with Blasquez, who's now over at Cal, and what they are doing, and then kind of interchange that with what we were doing, or intermix it, I should say. So our sled progression is pretty much the same as De La Salle's. Our blocking progression that we do with shields, which I probably use more now than even the sled progression, because the one thing about using shields or a human surface is, you know, it moves, where a sled is so linear. So you can really get some basics off a sled, but I think even more so blocking progressions with shields or a live body is better. But, you know, everything's about a progression. It's step by step. You can't go to the next step unless the first step is pretty darn good or near perfection. And, you know, that the beef concept has been real good for us. You know, the B is for the blast off, and the E for explode, and then elevate and finish. And that's something that if the kids can tell you, you know, coach, my blast off was really bad, or my get off was really bad, or no, I didn't elevate, you know, they have some kind of language that you can share with them to talk back and forth. And then when you're showing them film, it's the same concept. Instead of just saying, now you did this wrong, you did that wrong, well, you know, this is what could have been better, and you didn't elevate on this one, and look, you didn't finish, you know, you went until you felt like you were comfortably in the block instead of when the whistle blew. So, you know, things like that. But, yeah, I mean, the blocking to me is really what makes the offense go, because you can have any running back in the backfield if your O-line can block well, but you can have a thoroughbred back there, and if your O-line's no good, he's going to be in trouble.
Mm-hmm. You also have a very simple blocking scheme. Someone asked me to ask you this, if you could just go into a little bit of depth of what your blocking system is and everything. Would you like to go ahead and do that?
Yeah, I mean, everything's about a double team at the point of attack. There's certain plays you can't get a double team, maybe rocket sweep, even though we sort of double that with the wing and fullback. Fly sweep's a little hard to double, but everything else is a true double team. Power, counter, Trojan, which is our power sweep, trap, tackle trap, all those plays are double teams at the point of attack. So, and we always have one offensive lineman who's assigned as the coach of the play, and it's the second digit called in the play, so he always knows that. So if we're running 24 power, our right tackle is our foreman. He's coaching the play, and he's going to set the double team, or he might even call off the double team if there's guys just diving at the ground that we don't necessarily need the double team, or if they got a marshmallow in front of them, you know, they'll call the double team off. But we always want to assume we're playing a team that can beat us and has a D1 D lineman that we have to block. So we're going to always have an opportunity and most likely take that opportunity to double team that kid. And everything works off that, you know, so the pullers are pulling to the inside hip of the double team. The kick out is kicking out through the inside hip of the double team. The ball carrier is aiming at the inside hip of the double team. And we remain on our double teams. We do not chip off on our double teams, because we always have two or more pullers coming behind. And when you can tell 280-pound guys that they don't have to chip off and they're blocking some 290-pound kid who's going to USC next year, you know, they have a chance. But you take those same two kids and you tell them, well, you need to look at the backside linebacker, and if he comes, you come off, and if he comes over the top, you come off, and you can't do it. You're gonna get beat every time. And your pad level is going to get higher because you're looking at something, and you'll never be able to defeat that type of kid. So we always give them the opportunity to stay on the double team. Now, obviously, if that kid pinches inside or, like I said, dies on the ground, then we can release to the next level. But I don't ever want them to have to think like that. So I think that's what makes our offense the most productive, is that we're always beating those people at the point of attack and don't have to necessarily look inside to chip off at that level. And then as far as everything else goes, I think the big thing is putting the kickout guy in conflict. If that defensive end on 24 power wrong arms or squeezes, your fullback has to be versed enough to understand how to log block him, and now the play hits one hole wider, and now the defense cannot be right. So those two concepts, the double team at the point of attack and making the kickout wrong, are huge. And if you can do that, you can take a B-minus team and beat an A-plus team every time. You know, and if you have a D or an F team, then you still even have a chance against some good teams. So and if you got an A or A team, you know, you're going to win a championship and you might not lose a football game. So
now, your pulling technique, do you do the everybody's talking about the skip pulling and everything. Do you do that, or do you have another
technique? You know, it's funny. This is going to be the first spring ball I don't teach it at all. And the reason is I started doing it about 4 years ago, and I really like the fact.
Which one? The skip pull? Okay, you're
I started to do the skip. We're not going to do it this year, and I'll tell you why. We would teach it during spring ball. And then I would tell our kids, listen, you're going to give me 2 weeks of doing this, because no one ever starts off doing the skip pull. Everyone was always taught, you know, the traditional pull. And so we would do it for 2 weeks, and our kids would inevitably, when I told them they had the opportunity to go back to their traditional pull or their skip pull, they would go back. So I figure this year I'm not even going to bother teaching it. Now, the one thing I will say about the skip pull that does teach kids, it's to keep their shoulders square as possible to the line of scrimmage while they're pulling through, because you don't have to rotate the hips as much. The problem is, and what my kids don't like, especially the way I emphasize it, is, you know, I tell our kids, you're on a freaking mission to attack people, and nobody is going to out-hit you, because you're going to be able to run full speed, and you're going to give me great pad level. And even if you miss, I don't care, because I am not going to allow you to ever slow down or do anything to hinder the puller behind you or the ball carrier behind you. So with that being said, when they do that little skip, they don't feel like they get the same type of momentum they get with the traditional pull. So, you know, the traditional pull of opening the inside foot as you're going to pull, as long as they get about 45 degrees in depth and tilt their shoulders 45 degrees to the line of scrimmage so they can still turn their head to see the linebackers as they're pulling, they're fine. Now, if they open up their shoulders and hips further than that, then they're going to get baggy around the double team, and they're not going to see the inside-out linebackers coming with that type of charge. So that's the main thing you got to be careful. It's not necessarily the skip pull that cures that. It's the fact that you're preaching to keep the shoulders 45 degrees or square to the line of scrimmage so you can do those two things. So, and then again, like I said, it literally is pretty close to 100% that every kid I – give the option to says they feel like they get more momentum going when they do a traditional pull. So this year, we're not even going to bother teaching the skip pull.
Okay, and your guys, reading through your book, you have a pull one, a pull two. You want to explain that to everybody?
Yeah. So I mean, one of the big things when you pull is you have to have enough depth to where if you end up log blocking the kick out as opposed to kicking them out, you have to be able to get around it. So, you know, if we knew we're going to get the kick out block every time and get this great double team and never get any penetration, then we wouldn't pull with depth. But there's the further you pull from your original alignment, the deeper you have to get, because more bad things can happen because there's more time expiring as you're going around the edge. So when we pull off tackle, it's generally what we call now a power one pull for the guard and a power two pull for the tackle. And the reason we do that is so they understand what depth. So a power one pull is making sure you get at least 1 foot of depth. A power two pull means to get at least 2 feet of depth. Now, that's off-tackle stuff, so we use that for power and counter and even trap. You know, they'll do what we call now just a P1 pull for trap, which is a tight pull where you're getting 1 foot of depth, but obviously you're going to get right back downhill like a fold block almost immediately, because when you pull for the next level on trap, then you cannot get too much depth. So I'm not talking about kickouts now, too. I just want everyone to understand all the pulls I'm talking about right now have to do with second level pulls, meaning we're going up to a linebacker. Traps are totally different. So if you have a P1 pull, you're getting 1 foot of depth. Tackle's getting two because he has a P2, and the fullback is your kickout. And again, those two guys have to read it. So now, Trojan is an alley play, and that hits, you know, 1 to 2 gaps wider than power. So now our Trojan pulls, which we call it T1 and T2, have to do with yards. So if you have a T1 pull, you're getting 1 yard of depth, obviously 3 feet. And if you have a T2 pull, you're getting 2 yards of depth. Now, the average kid is never going to get 2 yards of depth. But if you tell him to get two, he'll get 1.5, and it works out pretty good. In a perfect world, if you and I were pulling and I was the guard in front of you and we were pulling right, your left shoulder would be even with my right shoulder. So there's a little bit of an offsetness between you and I. So if I get blown up or I trip or the double team gets through and I have to pick him up, you can still get around me because you've got a half man of depth more than me, and it works out really well. So having them understand the depths, and we just put it on the wristband so a kid, you know, doesn't even have to think about it anymore, you know, how much depth they need to get for a particular play. And the rule of thumb is the wider the play from you, the deeper you're going to have to get. But, again, we kind of take the thinking out by just telling them 1 foot, 2 foot, 1 yard, 2 yards.
On your blocking, your pullers, you have guard tackle combination, you have guard and combination. Do you have tackle and combination? I mean, how did you come up with this concept and why?
Well, you know, Jason Mensing over in Michigan uses it a lot, and you know, he makes up animal names for who blocks who and all that kind of stuff. And what I liked about what he was doing is he's always getting that double team at the point of attack, and you know, I've kind of taken that and ran with it. So it's nothing I really made up. I mean, I've taken it probably to an extreme, just because I'm at a bigger school than Jason's at. He's a small school, so he doesn't have to do as much as we do. But you know, point being is, you're just insured to get that double team no matter what. So if the tackle is the coach of the play and you're running 24 power and he is more covered than the guard, then him and the tight end are going to double team. If the guard is more covered than him, then him and the guard are going to double team. Now, if they're both evenly covered, that means he is going to double team with the tight end, and the guard is the guy inside of the tackle. The guard is going to cut or dual block the man on him. So he's not going to get a double team, but he's not the point of attack, so he doesn't necessarily need one. And it just kind of, you know, goes from there. We do it on trap, we do it on counter, and we do it in our Trojan sweep play as well.
Okay. And you're pulling, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about your backside pullers. You get, you don't have any conflict with your ends and guards and pulling from the backside.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, no. Yeah. You know what? We went to a different concept last year, too, as far as who pulls on the backside. I mean, I pulled tackle tight end, I pulled guard tackle, I pulled guard tight end. So in that combination of years of pulling all those three guys from the backside, I like the combination of, in a perfect world, of pulling guard tackle like traditional counter tray and power. The problem lies when the tackle is covered by a stud, and you're asking a tight end who might be 160 to 180 to try to cut him, and this kid's going to Cal next year, it's not going to happen on a play-by-play basis. If the kid knows how to play football, he's going to flatten you out, and he's going to go make a play down the line of scrimmage, and every once in a while you'll get a high-low call because the center down blocks into him and your tight end's cutting him, so then there's a 15-yard penalty. And then being in shotgun, the other coach can make a case for the free blocking zone is disintegrated immediately. You know, so you can't cut, which is wrong because the cut is going to be an initial movement and that is legal. But you know how coaches can get into a referee's head and then all of a sudden you can't cut, you're in trouble. So what we do is our left tackle is the coach of the backside on every play. And if he is covered, like he generally is in a 5-2 safe front, he is going to inside reach that guy that is on him. And now the tight end is going to pull for him. If he is uncovered, like you would see in, say, a 4-3 front, then the guard and the tight tackle will pull. And as long as the tight end can inside release on that 7-8-9 shade who's on him, that guy can't make the play from behind, even if he's a 4-6-40 type kid. So that's how we protect the backside. Now, in the rare occurrence that both of them are covered and the center's even covered, then that is the one time we have to cut. So the center would block the man on him, the tackle would block the man on the guard, and he could cut him, and he might have to because he is one man removed, and the tight end would cut the man on the tackle. The good thing about it is you'll never get that high-low call because your center is not blocking back. And, again, that's few and far between. If you get that front, you should be running rocket sweep and fly sweep until they get out of it because they can't defend you when they have, you know, seven guys, eight guys on the line of scrimmage, and rocket and fly sweep is like stealing. Or throw the ball in the flat, and 3-yard route becomes a 50-yard touchdown. So,
right.
Okay. So that's how we're protecting the backside.
Good. We got another caller, Tim. Let me pull him
okay.
in.
Okay.
Yeah. Who am I speaking with? Hello. Oops. There we go. Now I hit the right button. Hello.
Hello. My name's Brian.
Yeah. Hey, Brian. How you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Good, man. You got a question for Tim?
Yes, sir. first of all, thanks, Coach Murphy, for taking the time to talk. I think this is a great job, and I really appreciate all of your materials. They're really good stuff.
Sure, sure. I appreciate Leonard doing this.
Yeah. My biggest question is, I understand how you make all your backside calls on power, because fullback is, you know, is basically the kick out or log.
Right, right.
But in your counter game, can you discuss a little bit how, with the calls you're making with your backside tackle, how it might affect what's going on with in most systems or lots of systems, you know, in the counter game, the guard and fullback will switch assignments a little bit. And can you talk about how that might affect the timing or how you handle that?
Well, the guard, in the way we're blocking it now, gets to pull no matter what. So they could come up with a, you know, 8 men on the line of scrimmage, and our guard can still pull.
Okay.
So the guard is completely freed up the way we are protecting it. So he'll always be your kickout on counter.
Okay.
Now, you might lose the tight end or tackle if everybody is covered, because the tackle is going to have to protect the guard and the tight end is going to have to protect the tackle. And our fullback leads our counter on every play anyway. So the only time we don't bring the fullback with us on counter is when we know, you know, like a 4-3 team, a lot of times the Mike backer is reading the fullback. But if we realize that anyone's reading our fullback, or if we just want some extra protection on the backside, we call Phil. And Phil just tells the fullback to go opposite of where the play is going. So if we're running 45 counter, which is to the left, our fullback is usually leading with the tackle or tight end, whoever's pulling, through that off-tackle hole. Now, if we call Phil, he's going to fill right off the outside hip of the tight end for any kind of outside pressure and to influence any linebacker that might be reading him. So as far as our backside rule goes, it doesn't hurt us at all, because our guard, just like for, you know, trap, same thing, our guard is always free to pull. So on power, we're guaranteed to have at least one extra puller. And on counter, we're guaranteed to have a kickout guy by that guard every time.
Okay, I gotcha. Can I make one last comment before I get off here?
Yes, sir.
Hey, in looking at your shotgun double wing stuff, it looks like you're uniquely poised to do, you know, something single wingish, so to speak.
Sure.
Any ideas of doing something that in, like, full spin or anything like that in the future?
No, you know, and obviously when you look at this stuff, there's a ton of relationships with this, with the single wing, and, you know, there's a lot of similarities all the way across the board. The problem that I see with the spin at the level that we're at is the ball just does not get to the line of scrimmage fast enough. And, you know, when you're playing, you know, each year we're usually playing some kind of top 50 team, or, you know, De La Salle, when we played them last year, was number one in the country at the time we were playing them. And I just want to always, everything we do is to prepare for the team that's better than us. You know, we're never going to prepare for the teams that we know we're going to beat by 50, or put in some play that we know is going to beat a team that we beat every year. So everything we do is with the philosophy base behind it, that this needs to be successful even against the very best teams with the largest amount of D1 talent. And we just can't hit the spinner series, especially the sweep and the reverse, slow down significantly with having to do a, you know, a pivot and a reverse turn and the depth that it takes to get the ball back there. Now, you know, there's teams that do it and teams that have a lot of success doing it, so I'm not knocking it at all. I'm just saying for us, exchanging the ball underneath as opposed to behind gets us to the line of scrimmage so much faster, and the timing with our pullers are so much better. A lot of times when I see teams running the spinner series, they break a cardinal rule in what I teach our kids, and that is that if you're a ball carrier, when the last lineman is passing the line of scrimmage, you need to be no further than 2 yards from that kid. If you're any further, and I really like hand length to 1 yard behind him, that's perfect case scenario. But if you're further than 2 yards behind your last puller as that puller is entering the line of scrimmage, you can get caught from behind. Guys are going to come off the blocks and make the play, and you can't utilize that blocker in front of you. So when I see teams that run the spinner series, their back is significantly behind their pullers a lot of times. And with our kids, not necessarily being as fast as the teams were playing each week, that would be the case even more. So that's the only reason. But I think it's great for deception. I think it's fun. I think it's neat. It's just not the best thing for us to play those types of teams.
Understand completely. Well, thanks, Coach Murphy. And
you got it.
And hopefully, Coach Johnson, I'll meet you in Virginia this summer.
I'm going to try to get there. I'm trying to get the horse and buggy together right now.
All right.
Thanks. All right.
Okay, buddy. Still there, Tim?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to learn how to operate this board here.
Sure. Yeah.
No huddle. A lot of things going on here with no huddle and everything. Up-tempo, warped speed, nuclear speed, and all that good stuff. How do you do your no huddle?
You know, we did it again, to be honest, probably started the whole thing because I know it's going to buy kids in more to what we're doing because it's more of what they're seeing on Saturdays and Sundays, and especially with the popularity of University of Oregon, is kind of the reason I started. But as I'm doing it, gosh, I mean, I love it. And the reason I like it is probably number one is we get so many more reps at practice because now our kids know how to hear a whistle and reload and line back up without even thinking. So we're getting our cardio in, we're getting a lot more reps in, and then, you know, as far as the practice benefit right off the bat. But number two in the game is, you know, our kids are going to be at least as conditioned as the teams we're playing. And, you know, when you go up against a team that has a little bit less conditioning than you or might even have one or two players in there that are their top dogs that are not very conditioned, you're going to absolutely break their back with the up-tempo. And it obviously makes it tougher for teams to adjust. You know, in this offense, you're going fishing. And as soon as you find a play that is detrimental to the way they're trying to defend you, if they don't adjust to it quick, they're in trouble. So a lot of times they can't adjust to it. And, you know, when you're playing a team like us who double teams a lot of times you're going to play your bigger D linemen too. And those big D linemen, man, they can't keep going. Play in, play out, getting double teamed, chasing down rocket sweep, getting fooled by counteraction. You know, they're tapping out and play three and four, you know, on a drive as opposed to being able to take the whole drive when you're huddling up and taking your time. So it's been great. I love it. The fans love it. The kids love it. It gets us a ton of reps in the off season during camps, seven on sevens, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, another thing too is sometimes when kids think, because they have time to think, they make mistakes. I actually am a believer in get them in a rhythm and get them going so fast that they don't even get nervous. You know, they don't even get to a point where they're going, oh, man, this is on me. We've had some close games, and I don't even think our kids sometimes realize the score because they're just going, you know, and they're on autopilot. And that's what we always want from our kids is some kind of autopilot because that's how you play your best football. And I think you get them in that rhythm that much more with going no huddle.
Are you pro wristband or against wristbands?
I am.
How'd you?
I'm all wristbands, man. You know, wristbands. I love them. And the reason I like them too is because of practice. You know, you're getting your second and even sometimes third teamers in with quick reps. They don't have to memorize things. You're always going to have a special ed kid or two on your team that struggles memorizing things. When you change a play, you're really throwing your kids off. But if they're looking at a wristband, it doesn't matter what you're doing in that change. You know, you might block a play a certain way and then not like it or want to change it for that week, and a kid has to memorize that, he's in trouble. As soon as the adrenaline starts going, he's going to revert back to what he knows best. Well, when you have wristbands and they're looking at that, it's an easy adjustment. So we have the rule of every play next to the play itself. So not only are we calling out the plays through the wristband, but if they ever have to refer back, or maybe your left tackle goes down and your left guard is the best guy to fill in for him, and he has to move the left tackle on Thursday. Well, all he has to do is put a wristband on and know how to read his rules, and he's good to go. So they're maintenance. It's tough. You got to keep them maintenance, and, you know, you got to have one for the first string and the second string, and there's a lot of extra work that goes with it. But in the long run, it's significantly worth it.
This idea, I heard this term here about 6 months ago, marrying plays or putting plays, more than one plays within a play. Do you do that? With, I know from your power play, you're reading the backside in. Are you marrying any other concepts in there? No, just taking advantage of defenses wherever they give it to you?
Yeah, you know, we are. I get a little concerned with making the kid have the pressure of making the read in the middle of the play as opposed to me just calling the play when, you know, I'd rather call naked when I know that defensive end is chasing or even have the quarterback audible to it at the line of scrimmage as opposed to having to read it on the run because, you know, I'm so adamant on not turning the ball over. And I think the number one way teams turn the ball over is off certain kinds of options, whether it's read option or true veer or whatever it is. So, you know, we had, I don't know, I can't remember. I know I was saying it during the clinics, but I think we only had 7 turnovers in 2012 in 14 games and 6 turnovers last year, you know, with our first team the entire season. So it was, our turnover ratio has been extremely, extremely low. And to add a true married option in 2 plays in one does concern me a little bit. So we do it a little bit, but to be honest, I'd rather be the one calling it than making the kid make the decision.
Okay. All right. One thing that impressed me a lot about you, Tim, I really thought high of you about 5 years ago. I learned, I don't know how I learned it, that and you weren't going to be coaching. I jumped on the telephone right away, and I called you. I don't know if you remember. And
yeah,
I thought you
yeah.
was, I thought you were sick or something.
Yeah.
And I said, Murph, I said, that dude? I said, no. And you didn't coach for a year. Would you mind explaining to people what happened during that period of time? If not, I understand.
No, for sure. I mean, I'll be honest with you. It was a grind in Clovis, and I was approaching burnout. And I was even saying at our crab feed to some of my coaches that, you know, this year is going to be tough for me, man, because I'm not having the feel to go through the off season and the excitement that I was having. I was just, you know, and Clovis is a small piece of Texas out in California, and the pressure is pretty intense. And it was about year 8 or 9. That Clovis thing was a 5-year plan in the beginning, and I was on year 8 or 9, and I was just feeling a little bit burned out. And then right before spring ball, my daughter ended up getting into an accident where, you know, she came an inch away from losing her life, and she had to get airlifted to Oakland Children's. And thank God everything was okay. She got away with a severe concussion and a ton of stitches. But it kind of threw things in perspective, made me realize how short, you know, things we have, especially family-wise. And, you know, she was only – gosh, 9 years old at the time, and I didn't feel like I was spending enough time with her. And I felt like at the point where I was, my mind wasn't right. My time was not being used the correct way. And then when that accident happened, I just said, man, this is either a sign or this is just something that's flat out to a point where you're not going to be able to handle it and do it right. So I knew I had great assistant coaches that could take over. I knew the guy I was going to allow to take over wanted to be a head coach someday, so it would give him the experience. So, you know, I felt comfortable in doing it. So, you know, there was some selfish reasons for it to try to get my mind back out of burnout. But then also there was the obvious reason of trying to spend some more time with my daughter and doing some things that I couldn't do. Because, you know, once football starts, man, there's only a certain amount of things you can do and share with other people because your time is so constrained. And then when you're with them, you're in the frickin' twilight zone because you're thinking about what you need to do tomorrow at practice and you're stressing about this kid being hurt or this kid getting in trouble. And it just, you know, so it was a little bit of a mental, physical, and then family type break I needed to take.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was so impressed with you from that day. I tell you what, you gained a friend for life for that because you had to, you know, I know how charged up you are. And to put things in perspective like that, you know, and I talked to young coaches a lot about that. I said, guys, it's only a stupid game. Let's not lose it like that. It's only a stupid game, you know.
Yeah, no, I think I've gone back to coaching a little different ever since that time as well, where, you know, you sometimes you're going to realize you can't watch that film, or sometimes it's a little bit more worth it to get that extra hour sleep because you know you're going to be better served hanging out with your family the next day. So definitely it's helped me with Christy, definitely helped me with Kennedy. So it was a good idea, I think. And like I said, maybe just getting older too has helped, but putting things in perspective, sooner or later you have to do, or you're going to look back at you know, retirement age and say, man, what was I doing? So,
How do you handle discipline on your team, Coach?
We're up down team.
Let me say this: you don't have that problem, right? I mean, you are.
No, I do. I do. Are you kidding? Jeez, I wish. I got some high maintenance kids, man. I somehow breed that type of kid. It seems like I attract that type of kid. I think, but no, I mean, you know, obviously it's more preventative maintenance. You have to talk to them every day about not drinking, not getting high, doing the best they can, treating people right. As soon as you veer away from that and all you're talking about is football stuff, you're going to lose them. And, you know, that's probably number one. Number two is I punish them the moment it happens. I try not to ever forget or let something go, because kids will take that and use that to their advantage. And then so we do a lot of up-down stuff. And then we talk about trust. You know, trust is one-third of your reason you get playing time. And if we can't trust you, you know, we do that scale, that sliding scale of 30 points, where 10 for work ethic, 10 for trust, and 10 for athletic ability. And if you're a 3 or 4 on trust, you're not going to start, you know. I mean, as good as Slocum was, he didn't start probably but half the games I had him on varsity, because I just, you know, sometimes couldn't trust him. There's been plenty of kids like that. I got a defensive end right now that should be a 3-year starter for me, and he hasn't started a game yet because I don't trust him. And he's a physical specimen, and he's an outstanding football player. But, you know, he's going to go into tomorrow's spring ball as the starter, and it's his to lose. But to be honest, he was probably athletically our best defensive end, or at least one of the best defensive ends the last 2 years, and I've barely been able to play him. So, you know, if they know that they're going to get their time, playing time pulled, and they're going to get a ton of up-downs and make the team pay, they're usually going to take care of things. But, you know, this kid has struggled to do so, and some have. But for the most part, we take care of it. And, you know, our administration loves our football program and, you know, thinks it's the best possible thing for our school and, you know, role models for the school and school spirit and all that kind of stuff. So we're doing it right, I think. You know, sometimes there's a certain kid I can't get to and I wish I had a solution for him. But, you know, 9 out of 10 times, I think we're handling it the right way.
We talk a lot about clinics and about coaches educating themselves and everything. I know you do about 100 of them a year, it seems like, which you're always going.
Yeah.
For the young coach, how important is it to get around coaches to the clinics and to learn? How important is it to you?
It's huge. You know, I mean, I think the more questions you ask, the better you're going to be. When I first started coaching, I bought all kinds of books from, you know, Coach's Choice and all that kind of stuff, and learned a variety of different things. And then some of those coaches I would call. Now, with the advantage of more video being out there and immediate video and websites and all that kind of stuff, I think it's that much easier. But, you know, for a kid that has time and might not necessarily have children, or any kind of coach that's starting out at this thing or fairly new at it, you just got to get as much material as possible, you know, because there's a million different ways to skin a cat. But at the same time, you got to find the one that fits you and what's going to fit your kid that you're at, the particular school you're at. So it's a research-based thing, you know. And the great thing is about football, you know, I don't know if it's like this in any other sport, but, Coach, you've been doing this a lot longer than me, and you know every year you learn something, you know. And then that's what's so great about this game is – you know, you're
exactly.
going to learn something. You could coach for 200 years, and, you know, 201, you're going to still learn some things that you didn't know, whether it's how to handle a certain block, whether it's how to teach something, whether it's how to discipline a kid or handle a different unique personality. So the more research and the more you get around those people that have been doing it for a while, the better you are. Read and watch every single thing you possibly can, you know, even if it doesn't look like it's something that'll be much good. Every once in a while, you know how that is, you'll get one thing out of it. So,
okay, well, you know, I say it all the time, and I'm going to keep preaching about it. The guys got to go to these symposiums. And let me tell y'all something about Tim. Tim was at the let me tell you how passionate he is about what he does. At our Double Wing Symposium in New Orleans, there was a guy, I think the guy was deaf, or was he mute, or
He was a good dude, man. Deaf, and I think he was coaching at a deaf school as well. So
In Austin, Texas, I believe.
And
let me tell y'all what Tim did. Tim stayed afterward, after we got through, came back downstairs, and I think he spent about an hour with that guy talking. He was asking questions, and Tim was giving him the answer, and he had his interpreter there. And I just sat back and looked at Tim at work, and I said, my God, look at the passion to help this guy and everything. And this is what this thing is all about. You know, you don't know where you're going to help somebody, you know, but you know, none of us are geniuses. Everything we learn from somebody else. But to be able to give back, you know, that really touched me then.
No, I appreciate it. Yeah, he was a good dude, and I think he's one of them guys that's going to soak up everything. And he seems like, just talk about a guy that paid attention and looked like he was absorbing everything. Mm-hmm. But those are the kind of guys that are going to be successful. You know, if you're kind of halfway in the pool with this thing, you're not going to be very good. There's just too much competition. There's too many people that are passionate, like you said, about it. So, you know, if you're loving it like most people do, you know, research it and do it the best way you can, married to what the guys that have been doing it for a longer time, and, you know, find your source from that.
I'm going to I got one more thing for you to do, Tim, and you can go back to the house.
Okay.
I want you to talk about the person who really run this thing, and that's Chrissy. You want to tell everybody who Chrissy is, because everybody thinks you run it, but you really don't run it, don't you?
Yeah, no, I don't, man. I just kind of follow her lead. No, she's been really good she's been great with the technological part of everything, because I'm pretty bad with computers, so she's always helping with that stuff. She runs our school website. She runs my website. She puts out all the advertisements. She handles all the orders. And then she helps out at the program as much as possible. She's good with the parents. She's great in the stands, even though she might get a little loud sometimes and get a little overzealous in there. She's always there having fun. And, you need that, right? I mean, if you don't have a supportive wife, girlfriend, you know, whoever you're spending the most time with, you're going to be in trouble. And I know guys that have that where their wife or their girlfriend doesn't support them, and it's tough. So it's one of those things that almost becomes a family affair. And if you're lucky enough to have someone like Chrissy, then you're in good shape, and it'll help that much more. That's, like I said, it probably helped me get past and get back into this thing, but still have a perspective on how I do it. So I think I'm working just as hard, but maybe a little bit smarter, and not having to give just so much time to it where I can actually be a little more balanced. But you're right, Coach. You're right. Without a good woman, you're in trouble.
Big time trouble. Well, Tim, I really appreciate you coming on. I tell you what, I have learned tonight. I mean, I tell people all the time, I got the best seat in the house. I'm able to ask a question and take notes. I appreciate you coming on, Tim.
Thank you for having me.
And so with that, you have a good night, and make sure you give Chrissy a hug for me and tell her to say hello. Okay?
I will. Right on. Thanks, Leonard. I appreciate it. All right. Okay, take care, and we'll talk soon.
Take care, man.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Okay, everybody, that concludes us for tonight. I tell you what, we could spend 3 hours talking to Tim. And you could learn something. I owe him, Dr. Ward, Hugh White, and Colton High School. Oh, Christ, I'm having a brain lock right now, but I usually get that way when I get excited and get worked up. But we bring this for you, and anything that we can help you with to get better at what you do. And you know, we are here for you. If you know anybody that you'd like to bring on, let me know. We'll get them on here, and we'll talk, and we'll talk, and we'll get this thing going. And we just want to help you to become better at what you do. And if you give me those names, we'll do the research. Next week we got Steve Calante from Connecticut. He is going to be on this next weekend. And he's excited about coming on. I'm excited about coming on for Steve. So you know my sign-off. If you take somebody and hug them, make sure you tell them you love them. Guys, have a good week, and we'll see you next week, same time.
I see trees of green, red roses too. see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying how do you do. They're really saying I love you. I hear babies cry, I watch them grow. They're like much more than I never knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think